Networkers, hello again, and welcome to the Pilot Network Podcast. It's been a little bit of time since last we spoke. Matt's been very productive. I've been busy, because the difference, Matt, between productive and busy, people just say they're busy when they don't know what they're doing. Productive is people who are out going out there and doing some good work. What is that good work you've been up to lately?
Oh, man. We have hit some really huge milestones since the last podcast episode and all those sorts of things. We have just hit 18,000 members on the Facebook group and a little over 2,000 in the TPN Go app, which is absolutely blowing me away. So that puts us at roughly 20,000 members as of this particular podcast. That's pretty incredible, right?
Yeah, that's totally nuts, man. To go even farther, we finally figured out that instead of just meeting up online, let's get together in person. You kind of coordinated those Hangarfly events that started in November, kind of in the beginning of November, and then went through, or I should say the middle of November, and then went through. And there's more on the docket, and we had a couple learning experiences, that's for sure. Yeah. But man, we had some really big successes with a lot of guys showing up.
We were so fortunate. We're starting this Hangarfly thing. For those who haven't heard of it, they're called TPN Hangarflies, and our goal is to get together local pilots for a TPN networking event, pilot talk, shop talk, you know, whatever you want to call it. Informal. Bring your spouse, bring your kids, who cares? You know, have a drink at your local watering hole and just talk about pilot stuff. We had about 10 in November, and we've got about 8 scheduled for December. And really,
these are just amazing
test events to kind of figure out how this whole thing will go. It's been a lot of fun for those that had enough people show up, and some didn't quite get off the ground. But you know, it's a testing event and those sorts of things. So. We're all learning, but we're looking forward to January, where those are really going to start to take off, I think.
Coinciding with that, this is all the big push, and we'll tease this out here, towards a conference, an actual pilot network conference, where we go out and we, as the pilots, run the conference. We have the guests we want. We have the fun we want. We do what we want to do, not an organization telling us what we're going to do. And I think that's where we're going with this kind of thing. Stay tuned for a lot more. We know we talked about it and teased it out in the past, but we didn't have any money. Now yeah. We actually do have some money, because we have all these amazing new sponsorships that have been coming down because of what you, Network, has been doing to push the growth and talk and share information. We've got Crash Pad sponsors that are coming in like crazy. Bruce McGee's Crash Pads is probably the big one right now that has joined up with us and seen some awesome stuff in Atlanta.
Yeah, I just talked to Bruce the other day, and they filled up their Atlanta Crash Pads so quickly that he's thinking about taking this much larger than just the Atlanta domicile. So I think there's big things in store there.
And that is fantastic. That's actually opened up some other opportunities for the crash pad people out there, individuals who are running their own small businesses. Get in touch with us. We realize that there are a lot of places out there that we're not even talking about. We want you guys to have that opportunity to get your word out there. With that said, we've also got Tracy Weddle Photography. Awesome pictures that Tracy and the team over there is doing. Flying Woodshop has now been with us for a while. And in fact, I think Charlie Venema from Checked and Set just bought his first wood topper. And I know moving into a new house, we'll talk about that in a second. I'm going to have that once the bar is complete for sure. And then 4Flight, that's the big one. And we're going to get to them a little bit. We got a couple guests from 4Flight here today with us.
Yeah, we've got two guys here who are waiting patiently while we chat back and forth about all this stuff. I just want to give a warm welcome to Malcolm Toon and Travis Root from 4Flight. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
We're so lucky to have you guys with us and to have 4Flight as a brand new sponsor, and everything that you and the company have done for the aviation community is just absolutely incredible. I think best way to introduce you to the network is, Malcolm, do you want to start off and just tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to 4Flight?
Sure. So I've been a software developer for many, many years. Started my private pilot's license about 10 years ago, and then I got that. And then I started to see the evolution into mobile and really wanted to merge the two interests, the love of flying and this new marketplace and this new sort of thing that was happening in the tech space around mobile. So I started playing around with how to get geo-referenced information inside of an app and things like that. And then one day I woke up and realized there was a fantastic company that was also growing in the industry with something similar, and reached out to them and to Adam and Jason and Tyson and asked them what they were doing and what they were sort of thinking about for the future. And we ended up coming together then. So that was a little over 5 years ago. You know, the company's grown significantly since then. And we've been building lots and lots of great features and products for pilots out there. And can absolutely say that I'm honored to be a part of that team. So,
are you the one responsible for the Milky Way galaxy in the background behind the, if you zoom all the way out on the globe?
I am responsible for that. Yeah,
I noticed that was a recent change. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
And Travis, same question to you. What's your background? What led you to ForeFlight?
Certainly. Just want to say congratulations on the hire and glad to be here. I've been looking forward to doing this. I went to the U.S. Air Force Academy out of high school. I was a Zoomie, and like many young cadets, I wanted to be a pilot, but the doctors had their own say in it. They found out I was colorblind, and that was kind of the end of my pilot aspirations. So it took a minute for that to sink in. So I got my private pilot's license during my senior year, and a very early version of ForeFlight on my iPhone 3G kept me from landing at Butts Army Airfield by mistake.
Nice.
Would have been a shock for everyone involved. I did 6 years active duty as an intel officer, which was a great experience. I got to touch a lot of different things, and that's really helpful now because I've got kind of a little fingertip in every little separate area. I was eating a taco from a taco truck during South by Southwest 1 year in Austin. Noticed the ForeFlight sign on 6th Street and said, I don't know these guys were here. I'm going to put in an application. And so I did. Malcolm was actually one of the people to interview me as part of that long process. And I got hired about a year ago. I've been with the company since, primarily working on military flight bag, though my duties, much to my chagrin, still include quite a lot of PowerPoint slides.
Cool. Thanks for being here, guys. We really appreciate it. So, Malcolm, your title off of the website is Executive VP of Mapping, Navigation, and Military Technology. So it seems like you are doing a lot of stuff with the core of what pilots are interacting with on the app. Can you give us just a little bit of a brief history about what the iPad has done for this sort of EFB application? Just kind of a brief history of where that is and what your role in developing that is?
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting when you ask what the role. I think a lot of people take it for granted now that we have electronic flight bags, and you know, people buying paper charts. I'm not even sure some people even know you can still get paper charts. When I came into aviation, right, I had my set of sectionals for the area that I was training in. You know, three sectionals twice a year and six AFTs. And I think the iPad, people that now use it, you know, it's now synonymous with flight planning and in-flight situational awareness. But you don't realize that all of a sudden you have the whole world of data at your fingertips. You have weather and all those things all just joined together in one sort of seamless experience. And so I think that that's what the iPad has brought to the cockpit, which is not just now I have my folded sectional or my folded en route chart, and I'm sort of constantly unfolding that and trying to keep it in sync with, you know, the little bit of space I have on my knee. And then just looking outside my window for weather or whatever the briefer gave me before I left. I have in-flight weather. I have all that just displayed seamlessly on top of my original planned flight. I can adjust my planned flight, see what kind of airspace it might hit and stuff like that. All in sort of this multi-layered presentation system, right? Which for us is the map. We use the map and a couple of other things like synthetic vision and profile view to give you both the top-down as well as the side perspective of your flight so that you can make sure you're not going to hit terrain or obstacles. And I think now, to be when you ask to bring this together, what has the iPad brought? It's brought time to a reduction in time for pre-flight planning. And that's one just major thing. And I think about phases of flight, and one of the big ones is just in-flight or pre-flight planning. And you can sit there very quickly and run a bunch of different alternatives. You can figure out what your leg lengths are just with a ruler or even in the nav log or something, rather than out with my old protractor, right? And things like that. And so when you think about what we were doing 10 years ago, which was state of the art then, right? We had a little ESXB and you know, drawn lines on charts and folding those up, and whoever had the best fold won the folding contest. And now what you have really is this complete picture, both, you know, real-time data, forecasted data, all your charting components and things like that. And so it brings you time, and it allows you to run a bunch of scenarios, which then also brings you safety, right? I think, quite frankly, all that other stuff is nice, but safety in the cockpit is really, I think, where it shines, right? With real-time weather, real-time traffic, the ability to divert, and suddenly we are bringing real-time hazard awareness, right? You're seeing obstacles in terrain in real-time. The number of CFIT incidents and things like that have started to go down. And that, I think, is probably the pinnacle achievement of the iPad in the cockpit, is around safety, right? Which is always our top concern as aviators. You know, I could go on and on about all the benefits.
I know that for the longest time, the FAA was concerned about the fidelity and the ease of use of EFB apps and you know, ownership tracking and mapping and those sorts of things. They were concerned that potentially pilots would tend to trust their iPad more than their instruments. Have you seen any considerations for that, or how do you feel human factors of what's available on your EFB versus what you're seeing in front of you on your instruments goes? Do you have any concerns in that area, or is that more of a training issue than anything else?
Yeah, it's a really good question, right? I think it's the same argument when we started putting magenta lines in 430s. There's a generation that thought the CDI was the only path that you flew, and then we had a GPS line, right? And I think there's a similar argument to be had around the iPad, right? Is it easier for me not even to look at my panel at all, stare down at my iPad the whole flight, follow the magenta line, and is that really adequate? And I think, you know, obviously anybody that has their PPL or higher knows that, you know, the EFB is not a certified flight component, right? It's, you have your panel, those avionics and things like that are specifically designed for navigation like that. I think the EFB itself is a tool for information, a massive amount of information that you can disseminate and layer and things like that. So I think there's probably a contingent that is concerned around the EFB the same way that people are concerned about GPS. And I think that every new technology needs its time to mature. And, you know, we've watched the maturity of the data that's coming out from the various agencies. We've seen the maturity of GPS within the devices. We've seen the devices themselves mature and things like that, so they can withstand decompression testing and things like that. So I think the industry as a whole is vectoring in the same direction that we did when we were migrating to GPS navigation.
And I think it's easy to get bogged down with the speed at which this is happening, but it's actually, we're moving along pretty fast. It, you know, when you're in it, it seems like it's moving at a glacial pace, but realistically, in the last 7, you know, to 8 years, we have made great leaps and bounds with the FAA just releasing authorization to use ownership for commercial carriers while in the air, and that's huge.
Sure. I know 4Flight came out as a product of, you know, two of the principals are pilots. They're both instrument rated, and it started as, what gets me off the ground faster? You know, do I call the briefer? Do I, you know, what, right? And so the first versions of 4Flight were really weather focused, which it still is very, very weather focused, but they were only, you know, in fact, the name of the company was MyMetar, right? So it was a website is what it really started as a place where you could consolidate some of this weather information. So now you can make your go, no go decision faster. Then the, you know, the iPhone came out, you know, 4Flight, those guys, they decided let's move to mobile, which was probably the turning point in the company, right? When they saw mobile coming up, and they said, well, now I can do this on my phone, right? And then when Steve Jobs announced that they were going to open up, you know, I don't know if you remember, but the first iPhone was not something you could actually write programs for. So when iOS 2.0 came out, you could actually write a program. It's when the App Store came out. That's when, you know, the big turn happened was, let's move away from the website concept. Let's move into an app. Let's utilize more of the capability of this device in our hand. And still with the same mission, though, which is, let's figure out how to get off the ground or make the go, no-go decision faster. It's not, how do I get off the ground faster? It's, I want to go flying today. I want to go either 400 miles or I want to go 50 miles. Can I go today? And so it was this sort of relentless pursuit of, I want to start bringing in all the information that me as a pilot needs to make that decision. And it wasn't until, you know, a couple of years in that then we started having charts, right? It was like, well, the FAA produced some charts that are freely available on the website. And that right there in a nutshell created a cottage industry. Just the fact that all of the sectionals and all the en route charts were now geo-referenced and available, and anybody with a little bit of time and energy on their hands could take that data and move it into a presentation system like the iPad, then it just kind of snowballed. But it maintains that core, which is now, we are looking across different industries. We have, jets and turboprops, and we have performance packages and things like that for those guys that want to know, how do I minimize my fuel burn and what's the right route and stuff like that. But it still comes back to the same original question, which is, you know, what's the right flight and how do I make it safer? You know, is it go, no go? And just keep piling on every problem that pilot has. We just start trying to figure out, how do we make it into a feature that we can consolidate into this nice cohesive package where you can just look and intuitively make that decision.
And Adam, you asked, who is this for? It's always been foundationally for the GA pilot. That's how we got our start. That's who founded the company. And that's still the customer we hold in mind. When we first launched in the App Store, we were the most expensive app in the App Store. I think it was like $75. We actually still honor those purchases. If guys out there have been using it that long, they'll have an account and say, you know, for a little bit of time, if you paid $75, you have it for good. But that is still our bread and butter. That's still who we hold up in our minds as the customer. And from there, we've built into, we've met their needs. Who else needs this? Who else can we help with the product?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the product. The more features that you build into it, the more functional it is. So I've also noticed that over time, as we watch the progression and the evolution of the app itself, more and more features and layers and data gets added. What's some of the behind the scenes? How do you get that information in there? Is it all files developed by government programs or do you build those manually in-house? How does that information get into and available to me once I'm using the app?
Sure. So we have an incredible data team that every 28 days, we call it every 28 days, we're re-earning our customers' trust because we ship a data cycle. So that's a tenant, I guess, of the company, right? So we sort of talk about these philosophical or tenants that drive us. That's one of them, which is, if we don't ship data, you're not legal, you're not compliant. So we have an incredible data team that consolidates many, many, many different feeds that come from the industry and into a couple of different formats the app can read. So we have a funnel, if you will, that FAA, NAV Canada, you know, other places like that, most of them from governmental sources, obviously, or in the case of MFB, from DOD sources. So we get a bunch of that data comes in, it gets consolidated, normalized, cleansed, and packaged. And then before it gets shipped, it goes through a whole quality control check. So there's mechanisms for the data team and the QA teams to load that data into the system beforehand and make sure it all looks good.
We're proud to say we've never missed a cycle in the entire history of the company. And last year, that cycle fell on Christmas, and we were here shipping data.
Wow.
That's right. I definitely want to call out the data team. 4Flight is full of fantastic people, but the data team works really hard and works on Christmas to get the data cycle out or whatever it takes. So their job is monumental, and they do a good job at it.
That's awesome. You mentioned MFB. How does the average product the general aviation pilot here in the United States might use. How does that compare to the MFB product? And what is that specifically? Because probably 80 to 85% of the pilot network audience is current military. How does that differ from the average day-to-day stuff?
So I'll say we definitely dream of the day where we are in the hands of every DoD pilot. Wish we had a timeline for that, but that is certainly of high interest to us. So I'll leave Malcolm to talk about the history behind MFB because he was frankly here for it and I wasn't. He and Adam were instrumental in building that. But I do want to talk about how cool I think the concept behind MFB is, because we understand the needs of the military pilot are different in some ways, but similar in many more to pilots across every other sector. And I'm sure that's a philosophy you share at the Pilot Network. So it's a dual use product. The actual functionality, a military flight bag, the features are not really sensitive. There's no reason why a user generated shapefile, well, that's not useful to a GA pilot the same way it would be useful to a military pilot. So those features are shared across all of our customer base. But what isn't shared is the sensitive military data, the DoD charts, the new charts we've recently added, the ECRGs, the back end, the synchronization elements, and the data that's generated by the military. That is contained securely to the MFB product. And that is the fundamental difference. MFB is a separate data and data handling package that sits on top of the same ForeFlight product that really any pilot can, and in my opinion, should go by.
That's right. I guess if you're curious about how it got started, like a lot of things at ForeFlight, a need arose. We had a lot of DoD pilots that were GA pilots as well, and they reached out to us and said, I'd love to use ForeFlight, but we have specific navigation data that comes from NGA. And we worked with them to create a little script that they could run. I mean, this is basically the genesis of MFB was we provided a translation utility to these pilots that had reached out to us that could take the NGA data and move it into ForeFlight, and we would sideload that data in. And that was the very first incarnation of MFB, was literally a little translation program that we would share with people and a little bit of protection around the product there. You'd have to have a, you know, like a .mil address or something like that. That started a relationship with NGA, which was fantastic, and has grown and grown and grown. And so now we actually get feeds of the charts. It brought in this whole new type of data that we have now, the ECRG charts, the JOG, TPC, ONC, and range charts. So these are new innovative things that we're able to bring to MFB customers, mainly because they reached out to us and said, this is what we need. We really want ForeFlight in the cockpit. And we listen, right? A whole vertical came just from pilots asking us for something. We didn't do a big analysis on the market. We didn't staff up a bunch. We just responded to a need and continue to. All right, so that's kind of, again, back to the philosophy of the company is, what does the pilot in the cockpit need? And we're trying to make it for them.
That's awesome. So shifting gears just slightly, kind of alluded to it previously, but the FAA just recently announced that ownership display on EFBs in the cockpit is approved, and also Advisory Circular 12076D, which was a huge one for electronic flight flags. I know.
That was super nerdy right there. I love it.
You to just be fair, out, like, I'm reading it. I'm not, sure. I don't have it memorized, but
that is not true network. He has that memorized. He don't listen to him.
Yeah.
He has it tattooed, actually.
I do. Yeah. How do you guys see those sorts of announcements and the progression of EFBs in various forms and fashion into the cockpit? How do you see that impacting ForeFlight in the future? Does it shift what you're doing already, or does it make you kind of rethink possibility?
It's fantastic. I mean, I think we're really excited about that announcement and that sort of level of involvement from the FAA, right? They've examined it. They have now qualified it. They ran a study. They did all this stuff, and they deemed it airworthy. So really excited about the adoption in the 121 and other things that we can do with showing ownership.
Travis, from a military flight bag perspective, do you think there are any possibilities that brings up that previously haven't been available to us?
That's a good question. I'm not quite sure if that does or not change anything for the military. I think what we might see is guys like yourselves who fly for airlines and then come back into reserve duty, you guys are going to first enjoy EFBs on the professional side, but also bring a greater knowledge base back with you.
What, if anything else, you guys want to say to the TPN members, and at the same time, what do you ask of them to give back? So Travis, we'll start with you.
I guess what I'd like back from the community are stories. That's my favorite thing about working with Warflight. We got one a couple months ago about a U.S. Navy T-45 where the pilots went hypoxic. And rather than type waypoints and search through the FMS, they had Warflight and were able to quickly find a suitable airfield to recover the jet safely and recover from the hypoxia. And they wrote us a great letter and said, you know, without Warflight, and I could barely keep the jet the right way up, let alone use the panel. Without Warflight, we'd be in quite a pickle. So I love stories like that. For me, it really, really brings it home what we're doing. And I love to hear that we're keeping military, airline, GA, business aviation, just keeping pilots safe is what it's all about. So that's what I wanted to leave the community with.
What about you, Malcolm? What's your question for and want from the community?
Yeah, no, thank you. First of all, like Travis, thank you for the opportunity. This was great to talk to you guys. I live by that original tenet, which is we want to make the pilot's life easier, and we want to make them safer. And so, you know, I love the stories. I also ask that people, you know, do reach out to the team, and you can email team at forflight.com with suggestions or questions or the stories or whatever you want. We do see those. I think a lot of people send stuff in and think it just goes into the hole because they're sending it to the generic email address. If you send it to me directly, it actually gets probably less attention because of all the stuff that comes into my inbox. So the team does, they coalesce and correlate all the requests that come in, and those go onto our roadmap. And we really, really do like to hear what they needed and what they wanted came out of somebody asking for something. You know, synthetic vision was one. Icing and turbulence is another one. These are just things that are off the top of my head. It's just, there's so many things in the app that we now present because people asked for them. Every pilot flies differently. So hearing what people would like to see and gaps in the app, we would love to hear about.
Well, Malcolm has a development team to run and mapping and navigation to worry about too. But my primary purpose in life is to serve military flight bag and military pilots. So any military pilot with a request like that is more than welcome to email me directly. I'm Travis at forflight.com, and I'll make sure that what you ask for is prioritized and put into our roadmap.
Matt, how can people reach out and talk to us? How do they get a hold of us these days?
Definitely. There's a lot of different ways, but the easiest is email us at heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org or the TPN Go app. We're there all the time.
Or you can go to the Pilot Network Facebook page. Make sure you hit that like button and send us a message there that goes directly to Matt and I's account as well.
Malcolm, Travis, we just want to say thank you. It's been an absolute privilege to have you on the show. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys.
And thanks for having us.
Yeah, I want to send my thank you out too. It's a great way to look behind the curtain. So until next time, make sure you keep the shiny side up, the greasy side down, and keep your ear to the sky and listen for what's going on in the world of the network. Take care, everybody.